Zeus will be representing Eau Claire County Corporation Council. You may proceed, Council.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Keith Zames. I'm Corporation Counsel for Eau Claire County, and I will be arguing this case on behalf of Eau Claire County today. Also appearing with me is Assistant Corporation Counsel Mindy Dale. The issue in this case is whether a deputy sheriff's sole and exclusive remedy following an adverse decision of the Civil Service Commission is reviewed by the Circuit Court pursuant to 59.52, parent 8, parent C of the Wisconsin statutes. The identical issue was previously raised in this court in Milas v. Outagamie County. Unlike Milas, however, in this case, there are absolutely no facts which would establish equitable estoppel against the county and which would preclude this court from addressing the main issue. In fact, in this case, Eau Claire County has done everything right. Eau Claire County has specifically followed the statutory just cause process. Eau Claire County has relied on the history of 1993 Wisconsin Act 53. Eau Claire County has relied on City of Janesville case, which is the only published precedent, and the fact...
May I interrupt a second, Counselor? When was the contract signed, the major contract?
Which contract, Your Honor?
The one that's the subject of this case.
I think 1995, Your Honor. We've been running two-year contracts, and the contracts are up as of this January.
Well, the point that I will try to get at is, did Eau Claire County enter into this contract that gave this police officer the right to collective bargaining at a time when Eau Claire County knew that, or at least believed that, the only avenue of appeal was statutory appeal to the Circuit Court?
No, Your Honor.
The reason I make the point now, I was going to try to make it later, is you're saying that Eau Claire County has such clean hands, but they entered into a contract.
Yes. Your Honor, the contract at issue in this case, I believe, was entered into prior to the time that 1993 Wisconsin Act 53 came into place. And what's important about that is that Eau Claire County was operating under 590720, and there were not specific statutory procedures under 590720. Only after 1993 Wisconsin Act 53 came into place did those procedures apply in Eau Claire County. Eau Claire County has followed those procedures and put the union on notice that it would be following those procedures regardless of what the contract in existence provided. In this case, Eau Claire County held a full due process hearing. It lasted more than 6 hours. Teamsters represented Deputy Rizzo. Witnesses were sworn. Testimony was transcribed. There was examination and cross-examination. Exhibits were received, and an independent hearing officer presided at the hearing. The result of that hearing was detailed findings of fact and conclusions of law. That decision became final and conclusive when there was no appeal to Circuit Court under the statute. We are here today because the Court of Appeals has overruled itself by issuing a decision inconsistent with Janesville. The cases, in our opinion, cannot be reconciled. This Court should uphold Janesville and reverse the Court of Appeals in this matter. What's the effect if, in fact, this decision is upheld? Well, police officers will be treated one way and deputies will be treated a different way, even though the exact same statutory language exists. The Teamsters will get a second bite at the apple, or a de novo do-over, namely arbitration after litigation, which this court specifically denied Outagamie County in Milas. The Teamsters will essentially achieve through litigation what the state legislature has rejected on two occasions.
So there, from a legislative history standpoint, as I recall, there were one or two amendments that specifically address that issue on legislative history.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I'm just refreshing my memory by asking the question, but that this issue was before the legislature, this very issue we're talking about.
Yes, it was. And in fact, the original proposal, Senate Bill 66, would have allowed the parties in the context of their collective bargaining agreement to agree to supersede the statutory provision. That was the original bill. What happened next was substitute amendment number one, which would have allowed the option of the employee to go either to arbitration on the one hand or to the circuit court. What was passed was the statutory just cause procedure with appeal to the circuit court. In addition, there was another attempt made under 1997 Assembly Bill 944, I believe, which again would have given the officer the choice of going to arbitration or going to circuit court. That bill also failed and has not become law. If this decision is upheld, the parties obviously will have to go through an entire another hearing process and the expense and waste of resources that would be involved in that. More importantly, though, that second hearing process would be in front of an arbitrator who is not applying the statutory criteria, but is applying the just cause standard in the contract. And what our contract says is just cause. So what does that mean? That means that just cause is whatever the arbitrator says just cause is, which is not what the statute says.
Well, who decides under the statute what just cause is?
The Civil Service Commission decides what just cause is, and there are seven factors enumerated in the statute that they have to apply.
And who appoints the Civil Service Commission?
In Eau Claire County, the Civil Service Commission is the Committee on Personnel, which is a standing committee of the county board appointed by the county board chair. However, the statute allows that commission to be any folks. One of the arguments that's made here is that, well, under 62 we have a police and fire commission which the Court of Appeals felt was somehow more impartial. However, under this statute, Eau Claire County could appoint the Civil Service Commission to look exactly like the Police and Fire Commission. In fact, if the City of Eau Claire Police and Fire Commission would be agreeable, they could appoint them to serve in that matter. I think that's a distinction.
But that bothers me, as it bothers the Court of Appeals, that the county board and the county are parties to the collective bargaining agreement, right?
Yes.
And the county officer, the sheriff, is the grievant, right? The complaining party.
The complaining party.
And
the sheriff, though, is not.
Taking this complaint about a personnel to one of the parties to the contract, right?
Well, Your Honor, the fact is, though, under the statute, that Civil Service Commission is not applying the collective bargaining agreement. It is required to apply the contract. The other assumption that I think is just wrong is, one, the bias cases or the evidence of bias. There's nothing in the record that indicates that any member of this personnel committee was biased in any way against this deputy. The parties that are interested here are not the county. They're the sheriff and the employee. And the sheriff, all the sheriff can do is make a recommendation. I think what the Court of Appeals, in effect, did is it assumed that somehow the sheriff, that this commission are agents of the sheriff. Well, the sheriff, that assumes then that the sheriff somehow controls the county board chair, who controls the appointment process, and we went into some depth in our reply brief to say how that happens in Eau Claire County. To me, that's just absolutely and utterly absurd that somehow there's some bias imputed because the sheriff works for the county. That just does not make any sense.
You as corporation counsel are also the lawyer, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you're the lawyer to these three members then of this commission.
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
Aren't they members of the county board?
Yes, they are. But in this situation, I represent the case in court. And in fact, we had an independent person. In this case, it was the city attorney, Ted Fisher, who acted as presiding officer and was available to the county board to provide counsel to them. So our roles were clearly distinguished.
Did they have to be, or did you just set it up that way?
The statute does not require that, Your Honor, but the important part of the statute is it's immediately reviewable by the circuit court, which means we absolutely have to make a record that is subject to circuit court review and that will be upheld. We have to establish all of those factors, and we have to do it in a way that would not be subject to some kind of attack that we didn't provide full due process.
What's the standard of review by the circuit court?
The standard of review by the circuit court is enunciated in the statute and basically is whether there was just cause under the seven criteria in the standard to sustain the charges.
Well, does the court review it de novo? Or does
the court reviews the record. And the court can, if the court feels it's necessary, request additional evidence to make a determination.
Is it under certiorari?
Excuse me?
Is it a writ of certiorari, a petition for certiorari? Is that the review?
Under the statute, Your Honor, what the county has to do is send a notice after the determination is made to the grievant and the union, and then to say they have 10 days to file an appeal with the court. And then that case takes precedence so that decision is final and conclusive and also is speedy. It happens right away.
So you represented the Eau Claire County Sheriff at the proceedings?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Ted Fisher was the hearing officer, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what did the committee do?
What did the committee do? The committee heard the evidence, and the hearing took over 6 hours. There were exhibits that were introduced, cross-examination, there were objections made, and then the hearing, then the committee made a determination that there was just cause. And that
they meet with you?
No, they didn't.
They meet with Mr. Fisher?
I believe they did, Your Honor. So he was available to them to answer any questions they had.
Anything to prohibit them, the statutes, from meeting with you?
I don't know that there's anything, but I think as an officer of a court, it absolutely would be a conflict of interest, and I could not do that. And I think I may very well be violating the rules of conduct.
But if you're talking about conflict, wouldn't at least the Code of Professional Responsibility restrict you from representing the sheriff or the county in a proceeding before the county board or before these people because of the inherent conflicting positions that are potential?
I'm not aware that it would, Your Honor. I think clearly that I can only have one role, and I can either be the individual that represents the county, or I could act in a capacity of providing counsel to the Civil Service Commission, but could not act in both of those roles, obviously. What happens here is, under the statute, if you allow this to go to arbitration, not only is the arbitrator established in utilizing a different standard than what the statute is, but also, essentially what that does is it emasculates the entire statute, because Civil Service Commission's decision is made meaningless, the circuit court review and the role of the circuit court is made entirely meaningless. And I think it's important to note that there are other places in the statute where the legislature has provided for ADR as an alternative. Specifically, we in our reply brief, we talked about Section 63.10, and that's another Civil Service Commission statute. And that statute, the wording in the statute specifically allows the parties to agree that the collective bargaining agreement will take precedence over the statute. Also, under Chapter 32, under 6213-6M, for cities of less than 4,000, that option is available. What's important to note, though, is that it's an either-or. Either you got the collective bargaining agreement, or you have the statute. You don't have both. You don't get the statute and then come back and get the collective bargaining agreement.
Because but under your collective bargaining agreement, it doesn't go to arbitration until it's gone to your Committee on Personnel. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, John.
Isn't that procedure very similar to the statutory procedures? The procedure that is set up in the collective bargaining agreement, at least when I read it the other day, it seemed to me to be very similar to the statutory process.
The difference, though, Your Honor, in the collective bargaining agreement is it just says just cause. There aren't all of the factors, and you don't have the full due process hearing up front. You have the full due process hearing at arbitration. That's where you do everything that we did in this case in front of the Civil Service Commission. And I think you just have to look at the record, and I think the record is absolutely overwhelming. Deputy Rizzo deserved to be fired. There's no question about that based on his past record and based on what happened. And there was a full due process. He got all of the due process that was due, but he got it right up front. And I think the reason may be for this whole statutory scheme is that in some counties, sheriffs were arbitrary. And sheriffs made decisions because somebody ran against them in an election or for some other reason. And this was a way of saying to the sheriff, you can't make that decision anymore, and that person is going to stay in paid status until there is a hearing where you can actually show that just cause was met as it's defined.
So who's on the Committee on Personnel?
There are 5 members of the county board.
Same ones? I mean under the collective bargaining. Same people?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how is just cause defined under the collective bargaining agreement?
It's not. It's just cause.
But there's a whole body of cases out there on just cause.
I've got a whole book on just cause, Your Honor.
Right.
And there are a lot of different standards and a lot of different arbitrators that apply different standards to just cause. The nice thing about the statutory process is it defines exactly what you need to prove to show just cause. Otherwise, you're left at the whim of the arbitrator to determine what just cause is.
How different are those 7 standards from this big body of literature? I bet you can put every single case under one of those standards.
I haven't read every single case, Your Honor.
Neither have I, but I got a good deck.
But the point is, though, that it's not the same. And in City of Janesville, what the court there said was, what you're doing is you've got this irreconcilable conflict between the statute and 111.70. And the two don't meet, because what you do is you make this whole upfront process, which the legislature has specifically put in place, you make it meaningless. You make the circuit court review meaningless. You make the whole thing meaningless. And you do it over.
But counsel, you're making the collective bargaining agreement meaningless.
Only as far as the statute goes, Your Honor. And that's exactly what the statute did. And that's why you have to look at the statute in the context of what the original proposal was and what the amendment was that was not passed and what the subsequent bill was that also was not passed.
Now, when was the statute passed?
In
1993, was it?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe.
And prior to that, these collective bargaining agreements that allowed for arbitration were okay. Isn't that correct?
In our case, it was, because there was no process under 590720.
Now, what you're trying to tell us is that where I find some problems, some weaknesses in your case, is that if you are correct, then the labor movement or at least labor representatives representing all of these municipal employees, essentially gave away arbitration.
But what they got, Your Honor, was not having somebody terminated and potentially sitting for a year or a year and a half without an arbitration decision. That's what they got. And that is absolutely invaluable, because now you can't go into an unpaid status. You can't be demoted. You can't be suspended without pay, and you can't be terminated unless you have all this due process up front. Before, that due process may have taken a year or a year and a half when somebody, in our case, was in an unpaid status, which is absolutely financially devastating. So I think, in that sense, there was a big trade-off. And if in fact there's a concern about this, then the Teamsters need to go to the legislature and get something else put in place. But what I would submit to you is that it doesn't make sense to have a complete another due process hearing. That just doesn't make sense at all.
You wouldn't, if your argument is right, you're saying you don't get a due process hearing under the collective bargaining agreement.
You get a due process hearing only when you get to the end of the collective bargaining agreement, which is arbitration.
That's right. So your point is that it's just a duplication between arbitration and the statute. Who appoints the arbitrators under the collective bargaining agreement?
The parties do.
One and one?
No, we use a single arbitrator, Your Honor.
If they don't agree, it's through a panel of work. Is that it?
Yes. And that's something that the parties can agree to be under WERC or under private arbitrators.
And then how does it differ on the review by the court of a collective bargaining by an interpreter's decision and by a decision of the personnel committee?
Okay. Well, the decision of the Civil Service Commission is reviewed under the statutory standard by the circuit court, which the statutory standard is, was there just cause as defined by the statute to sustain the charges? The arbitrator is a trial de novo in front of the arbitrator. Not only the standard may not be the same, the witnesses may not be the same, the arguments may not be the same, whatever. It's not like applying the same standard to any other kind of appeal, where you appeal, you have an issue, and the standard is something that's clear. What the legislature has done here has treated law enforcement officers in a unique manner. They have said that they get all this due process up front. Well, nobody else gets it, and we have other kinds of employees. If somebody gets fired, they get their due process down the road. The legislature, for whatever reason, has said law enforcement employees should be treated alike, whether they're under Chapter 59 and their deputy sheriffs or Chapter 62 and their police officers. The legislature has also very specifically allowed for the collective bargaining agreement to supersede or ADR to be involved as an option in other instances. However, it's one or the other. It's not both.
What's your newest contract look like? This one's the one under issue now is 1/1/96 to 12/31/97. Does your new one have the same provisions?
The new one has not been settled. The most recent contract, there's a new one effective January 1st of this year, has not been resolved yet. The last one included the same provisions. Although the issue was raised in bargaining, the union refused to negotiate. However, under Janesville, it doesn't make any difference because of the irreconcilable conflict between the statutes. The provision as it relates to discharge, demotion, or suspension without pay is null and void.
Okay. Well, you know, the general rule is you try and harmonize collective bargaining agreement and statutes, and there's a, not a presumption, at least there's a indication in Wisconsin law in the cases that arbitration is to be promoted for labor peace, right?
Generally, Your Honor, we agree with that statement. Not in this case, however.
I understand that. but why do you say that they can't be harmonized? Isn't there anything that you can think about that would harmonize these two, this
no.
statute and the collective bargaining agreement? No.
No, no, Your Honor. Unless the legislature decides to put in language similar to what it's already done in 62.136M or 63.10. Or some other thing that the legislature has been proposed and has not been adopted. It's a legislative determination, though. It's not a judicial determination.
Well, the Court of Appeals can be viewed as harmonizing it. The Court of Appeals says, say, you got the very similar provisions under the statute and under collective bargaining agreement, and the statute says you can review the committee by circuit court. And the collective bargaining agreement says you can review the committee, same committee, under arbitration. So why can't you say it's dealer's choice? That is, that the employee has the choice. They're the aggrieved party. And if it was the other way, the sheriff would have a choice of either going to court or going to an arbitrator.
But that's the point, Your Honor. There is no choice up front to actually make that determination. We would have no problem, Your Honor, if the parties could just say, we'll ignore the whole statutory procedure and we'll just handle it the old way. However, that person can't be suspended, demoted, or discharged without first following the statutory procedure. And if we don't establish that in the hearing, if we don't convince the Civil Service Commission, we don't have any appeal rights. It's done and it's over. The employee, though, has the right to go right into circuit court and said they didn't establish just cause, and here's why, and the circuit court has to make that a precedential case.
Well, look at subsection 8 says that the system, this is the civil service system, may also include uniform provisions with respect to classification of positions, salary ranges, payroll certification, attendance, vacation, sick leave, competitive examination, hours of work, tours of duty, according to seniority, employee grievance procedure, disciplinary actions, layoff, and separation of cause, as described in B, which is the one we're looking at. What does the collective bargaining agreement do? If the board can establish hours of work, sick leave, vacation, what does the collective what's left for collective bargaining?
Most of those, the hours of work are in the collective bargaining agreement. The pay rates are in the collective bargaining agreement. The holiday provisions and vacation provisions.
Why is that permitted when the statute says that the system can do that?
Because in those instances, that's the way it works in Eau Claire County. And there are certain provisions that are included in the Civil Service Commission. But I think the bottom line, though, is with this just cause stuff, the legislature has said, you've got to do this. And so we follow the law and we do what the legislature has mandated us to follow.
But you allow collective bargaining to deal with vacation and sick leave.
Yes.
But not termination or grievance procedure. Even though the statute lumps it all together.
Because there's a specific provision of the statute that says exactly what we have to do for terminations, for demotions, and for suspensions without pay. And those are the only three things. So, what does that mean? That means the collective bargaining agreement can apply, and most of the grievances that arise under the collective bargaining agreement have to do not with discipline, but with how how a certain provision is to be interpreted or whatever, those are still all handled under the collective bargaining agreement. So for the vast majority of issues, the collective bargaining agreement is utilized.
Well, couldn't it be argued, counsel, that the legislature was simply giving the opportunity, if the statute did not exist, then it would be left in limbo as to where the appeal is. Where's the appeal from the commission? Or maybe just in the collective bargaining agreement. So that, in fact, the legislature was giving an alternative.
That's
not... You can go the collective bargaining route, but if you want to appeal, you can go to the circuit court.
Your Honor, if that's what the legislature wanted to do, then they should have done it. And they didn't do it. They said, you use this procedure, you have the Civil Service Commission do it, and when you're done, if the deputy wants to appeal, they go to circuit court. They didn't say arbitration or circuit court. That was substitute amendment number one, and that one bit the dust. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, you have another provision which gave them the exact same either-or situation. The legislature, I think, has done exactly what it says it's done. The language is very clear. And we are trying to follow that language.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Ms. Solden? You represent the General Chiefs, just so you.
May it please the court, my name is Naomi Solden, and I'm here on behalf of the Teamsters Local 662. If the deputy sheriffs in this state don't have the right to arbitration, they will be treated the worst of all county employees, although they're held to the highest standard, the standard of care that they're under. When the statute was amended, the county would have the court believe or find that the legislature took away the right under 11170 to negotiate arbitration agreements covering discipline, and also took away the authority of an interest arbitrator under 11177 to determine all terms and conditions of employment for deputies. And the legislature, under the county's theory, did that without ever even referring to the right to arbitration or the fact that it was taking this away. The reason, I think the reason there's a dispute, and the reason why we're here is because the statute provides an appeal procedure and it doesn't specifically state that you can arbitrate discipline. It also doesn't state that you cannot.
And so, in the bill, there's always the drafter's note and the preparatory note explaining what the bill is. Did it indicate that arbitration was being taken away?
No, never did. And this legislative history that's being referred to also does not indicate that the right was being taken away, because the bill that was proposed was a bill where collective bargaining agreements could supersede the statutory rights. In other words, they could take away the right. Deputies would not have the right to go to circuit court. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It specifically said supersede.
I asked opposing counsel that very question. So you're differing with him in the purpose, or perhaps the language of the legislative history, was not specifically to undo what he's talking about, the exclusive remedy.
Right. It didn't do that at all. It merely said that a proposed language saying that a collective bargaining agreement could supersede the statutory provisions, not that it would provide the right to arbitration. That was not what the legislature has done. It never tried to do that. I think also it's important to look at the statute and look at the procedures, because looking at those procedures shows that the arbitration does not render the statute null and void. There's basically three levels in those procedures where just cause will come into play. The first time, it's when the sheriff or somebody else wants to take some action against the deputy and files charges. The sheriff has to determine that there's just cause. The next step is that the board or the county board or the Civil Service Commission, it could be either, can be the actual board, makes the discipline decision, because the sheriff cannot do that. The board does it. The statute does not require a full-blown due process hearing. 5952 is not the same as 5926 or 6213. No hearing is required. There has to be some record of the basis for the board's decision, because there's the right to appeal to circuit court, and the circuit court makes its decision based on the record. So there has to be some sort of a record, but the statute does not require any kind of a hearing. It doesn't have the due process protections that the other statutes have. It doesn't say there's a right to counsel. It doesn't say that you have subpoena power for witnesses. It doesn't say that there will be testimony transcribed. None of that. Eau Claire had a due process hearing in this case, but the statute didn't require it.
Counsel, so, when I asked Mr. Zames, that I said that I had a problem with the fact that at least implicit in his argument was that the deputy sheriff simply gave away collective bargaining. And he says, well, they got a wonderful deal in return. They got a right to appeal. Can you answer that? From the deputy sheriff's standpoint, was that a good trade-off?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a trade-off at all, and if it was, it would not have been good, because, first of all, before the statute was amended, in 59, the deputies always were suspended with pay before there was a decision. That did not just happen with Act 53. Under 59.219A, which was before 5926, deputies could not be suspended without pay, so they always had that pay. They didn't get a due process hearing by this statute, for the reasons I just explained. It's not the same. It doesn't say a hearing has to be held. So they didn't get the right to any kind of a hearing. And if they had a due process hearing where the county board is the decision maker, they get a hearing there with the employer being the decision maker, because the county board is the employer. An arbitrator, on the other hand, is a true outside third party neutral, because the parties choose and they alternate striking names, and they choose a neutral. The county board is a party to this dispute because the county board is the employer. There's no way around that.
Does the legislative history reflect whether or not the Deputy Sheriff's Association or the Teamsters or anybody appeared in opposition or in support of this bill?
I couldn't find anything in the legislative history.
But the legislative history does show, and it's in the appendix here, you can start at about 85, thereabouts, a little before that, like 80. There are a series of bills, and one is a sort of a bill of rights for law enforcement officers. Then there are some other bills in here and amendments that gave people a choice of going to the circuit court or to an arbitrator, and they weren't passed.
Right, that 944.
And that's at page 85, and then 86. And these statutes deal with both the city and with the county. And then, what was Alt 1993 Wisconsin Act 53, that was the one that was passed?
Right. 53 was passed.
And that doesn't show, the arbitrator is out of there. Right?
Right. But...
how do you explain that?
Well, I the only thing that I can say about that is that I think that there's nothing in the statute really that prohibits a deputy from pursuing arbitration and a statutory appeal. And this was going to provide an either or.
Now, I've been trying to harmonize these statutes.
Right.
And harmonize the statute and the collective bargaining agreement, right?
Right.
And that should be the goal.
Yes.
How do you harmonize it? I mean, here the deputy sheriff went through and a hearing or a procedure and got a decision.
Right.
And under the statute, when you get that decision, the line would be to the circuit court.
Right.
And then the deputy sheriff backs off and starts with arbitration. How do you reconcile, harmonize the statute with the collective bargaining agreement? Seems to me that it's an either or, and that it can't be, they can't live together. Tell me how they can live together.
Well, they can because the statute, like I said before, doesn't provide the hearing. Eau Claire County happened to give them the full due process hearing, but that's not provided. But in any event, the committee's role is really the decision maker of the discipline. That's just like any employer making a disciplinary decision, except for that the statute requires the commission to specifically answer whether, you know, the seven criteria of just cause has been met. But in any union situation, this traditional just cause standard appears in all the contracts, basically. And the employer has to determine whether there's just cause before making a discipline decision. And that's what the committee does here. And that's all that the statute requires, is that the committee determine whether there's just cause. It doesn't require a hearing. So the committee makes this just cause determination for discipline.
The sheriff alone cannot make it under the statute. The committee has to make it.
Right. The committee is the like the employer in any private sector situation making a discipline decision. And then the employee, the deputy here, can take that to arbitration rather than go to circuit court. And once the employee goes to arbitration, according to the WERC, the employee can't go also to circuit court.
Okay, so that's it. He has that. You're saying he has a choice, but he doesn't have both.
Right. Okay. That's how the WERC harmonizes the two. And I think that deference to the WERC is appropriate in this case because the court does defer to the WERC when it's a matter of employment.
Well, if we would accept that, then under the collective bargaining agreement, do you have to start back with the personnel committee, or you just go right into arbitration?
I think that if you have a personnel committee, if there's a step in the contract that says a personnel committee hearing, then, or, you know, meeting or hearing, you don't have to repeat that.
You've already had that. Then you do what? If we should accept that argument, what happens to the City of Janesville case?
Well, I think you can do two things. You could determine that 5952 is distinguishable from 6213, because it is. Because in 6213, there is a requirement for a hearing, and there are different requirements making the PFC more of a neutral body, it's not actually the employer. You can distinguish and follow what the Court of Appeals did and leave Janesville, or you can go beyond that and essentially take away the underpinnings of Janesville by deciding that arbitration does not render the statutory procedures meaningless. And the reasoning there, the same reasoning in making that determination would also apply to
6213.
It would essentially, if you base it on beyond just distinguishing Janesville, then it would essentially overrule Janesville. It would take away the basis for that decision. Some of the reasons, some of the problems I think that the county points to are based, where there are a couple based on a misunderstanding, again, of the statute. The notion that the committee decision is supposed to be final and conclusive is based on a reversal of the statutory language. The language specifically says that if the committee's decision is sustained by the circuit court, then it's final and conclusive. In other words, there can't be a further appeal. You can't go to the Court of Appeals. You can't go to the Supreme Court. But it does not say that the committee's decision is final and conclusive unless reversed. And the city of Janesville, the court there also misread the statute and looked at it as stating that the committee's decision is supposed to be final and conclusive. The legislature made that decision to be a final and conclusive decision, and that isn't the case.
Could I ask, does the legislature have the power to do what Eau Claire County says it did?
To take away the right to arbitration?
Yeah.
I don't think that it has the power to do that by inference. I think that it would have to amend 111.70, which is the statute that provides the right to collectively bargain all terms and conditions of employment, which includes the right to bargain over arbitration agreements.
Why would it have to amend 111.70?
Because under the county's position here, that the statutory procedures here are essentially that they take away the right to arbitrate, which is a right given in 111.70.
Given to whom?
Given to all employees of the state. All beyond just the employees of the
municipal
state.
Municipal employees.
No, it applies actually to every private and public sector employees. But I think the Court of Appeals was correct when saying that given the strong national and state labor law policy favoring arbitration and the statutory right to arbitration, that the legislature to take away that right by inference, they couldn't have meant that. Legislature wouldn't have taken away that right and made people aware of it by having to infer that from a different statute, because they took away another statutory right if they did that.
Well, then what you're saying is, let me follow up, Justice Prosser. To Justice Prosser's question, we not only have to reconcile 59 and 62, but we got to reconcile 59 with 111.70.
That is the harmonization.
Mm-hmm.
If you harmonize, you're harmonizing 111.70, which is the right to arbitrate, which provides the right to bargain over arbitration, and the 59.52. I don't think you have to harmonize 59.52 with 62.13.
Well, one of the things is, I think it's hard to do, is say that sub 8 deals with unrepresented employees. Not represented employees.
Oh, sub A of 59.52?
52. On the other hand, it talks about law enforcement employees, and at the time this statute was amended, the legislature would know that they were unionized.
You don't understand how 8A could apply to non-union?
No, I can understand how it could apply to non-union, but I don't see how we can say it applies exclusively to non-union, because law enforcement is mentioned, and at the time that was adopted, legislature would know they were unionized.
I don't think you have to say it only applies to non-union. It can apply to union, but it doesn't, sub A doesn't state that you can't arbitrate discipline, demotion, or termination.
So the collective bargaining agreement basically takes precedent over the statute, and if you didn't have it in your bargaining agreement, I can't think of one, but if you didn't have it, then of course the statute would control, but here you had it. You had arbitration in the bargaining agreement, and therefore you had the choice between the remedy, statutory remedy, or arbitration.
Right, exactly. You have
the
choice.
But I just want to make sure that's the point.
Yes, that it's always a choice, that the having arbitration in the contract doesn't take away the statutory rights. They're there.
I think it was Milas, but I'm not sure, but I think it was Milas in which we didn't reach the issue because we said they were equitably estopped or something. The county was just a stop from
that's right.
I don't, maybe I missed it, but I don't think you raised any estoppel in this. What about the fact that I raised earlier that this contract was signed by the Eau Claire County Board at a time 3 years after this act was passed in which they gave this collective bargaining? Does that give rise at all in your judgment to an estoppel argument?
I think it could. It was the basis for our filing a prohibited practice complaint when the county refused to arbitrate because they agreed to arbitrate in the contract. We didn't make an estoppel argument, but I think that could provide the basis for an estoppel argument.
Well, it seems to me there's could be an estoppel argument against the deputy sheriff and the union. They agreed and did follow the statute, namely of going to the committee, and the committee making findings under sub B.
The union didn't have any say in what type of proceeding was going to be held. There is no discipline decision until that committee makes the decision. So this is what the county provided.
That may be, but I didn't just see or hear them saying, no, well, we're going under the collective bargaining agreement, and it's okay, you're under sub A of the collective bargaining agreement or whatever it is, and be advised that we're not going to circuit court, we're going to arbitration. In fact, you got a letter that from the county saying, we're going under the statute and be advised, then we go to circuit court.
Right, but the union can't go into the grievance procedure until there's a decision. Until there's a disciplinary decision, there's no grievance that can
no,
be made.
No, you didn't write and say, well, if there's a decision against us, we're going to arbitration because we're abiding by the collective bargaining agreement. You
no,
know, there's not a response like that.
There is not, but the county, I mean, I think the parties were well aware of each other's positions because of the letter that they got, and because this is not the only county that this has arisen in, where the counties are refusing to arbitrate, and the unions are saying that you have to arbitrate. In fact, you know, in some cases where if you don't go through the procedures, then you waive the procedures and they still won't arbitrate. So then you give up everything. It really does put the union in a bind because the union's got a contractual right to arbitration and really is not under an obligation to notify the county that it's going to enforce its contract.
If you prevail in this case, could you describe what the procedure is then? Would either the Civil Service Commission or the sheriff have the right to terminate a deputy?
The Civil Service Commission would. The sheriff doesn't because the statutes prohibit a sheriff from disciplining or terminating a deputy. The statutes say that that has to be done by the Civil Service Commission or the county board. So that would not change. The only change as far as these procedures, the only effect on these procedures from arbitration is that the commission decision, the Civil Service Commission's decision, would be reviewed by an arbitrator rather than a circuit court. That's the change.
Reviewed by an arbitrator, or the arbitrator would conduct a de novo hearing?
Oh, the arbitrator would conduct a, it would be a full hearing. It would be a regular arbitration, new evidence. You could put in any evidence that the arbitrator would allow. You'd have an arbitration hearing as opposed to going to circuit court and having a very deferential review by the circuit court. So there would be some impact on that decision in the sense that it wouldn't be reviewed under the deferential standard of review. But the purpose of the statute is not to protect the commission's decision from being reviewed under a de novo standard. The purpose of the, you know, there's nothing in the statute that says the commission's decision can only be reviewed by a circuit court and only under a deferential standard of review. The purpose of the statute was to provide additional procedural safeguards to deputies. And so the county sort of twists this and says that the committee's right to this deferential standard is being infringed on if you allow arbitration.
Well, does the court take evidence under C?
The court doesn't take evidence, but the court can can require the committee or the board to take further evidence on a particular point and then bring it to the court. So the court can require further evidence, but I don't read that as allowing the court to take any testimony.
Well, it says the court shall, upon application of the accused or the board, fix the date of trial,
right,
not review, but trial, which shall not be later than 15 days after the application, except by agreement. The trial shall be by the court, and upon the return of the board or the commission, except the court may require further return of the taking and return of further evidence by the board or the commission. It doesn't say it's going to take evidence.
That's the way I read it.
The question to be determined by the court shall be, upon the evidence, is there just cause as described in paragraph B to sustain the charges?
So I read that, I guess, as the court not. It does say trial, and that is confusing. But it seems as if, because it says that the court is making its decision upon the return of the board, that they don't take evidence. But they can require further evidence.
Could you respond to the argument? I know that you do in your brief, but maybe you could. I'd like you to do it orally as well. About the Senate amendment that was defeated.
The which one?
The Senate amendment that was defeated, the one that specifically provided for either circuit court review or arbitration.
I think that, yeah, that is 944.
It was a Senate substitute amendment.
Senate substitute amendment one was the one that provided that arbitration would supersede the statute. It's not that one. It's, you're looking at the Assembly Bill 944.
Substitute Amendment 1.
Oh, that one?
1992 Senate Bill 66.
Okay.
So that's the one
that gave them, at your appendix, yeah, at the other, at Mr. Zane's appendix.
Gave them the right to either or.
No, a Senate Amendment 1 did not give the right to either or.
59. Okay. You know which one I'm talking about?
I think you're referring to Bill 944.
Well, I'm looking at page 86.
Of the appendix?
Of the appendix.
Okay.
Looking at line 11. The accused may appeal from the order either to the circuit court or to an arbitrator. I don't care what you number it, sort of like, you know, naming it.
Okay.
This was defeated.
Right. Okay. That bill was defeated, but that bill that wasn't just providing the right to arbitration. That was greatly narrowing the scope of arbitration. That was essentially making the arbitrator function as the circuit court. In other words, all that the arbitrator could do under that bill was look at the return of the committee and answer the same question that the circuit court is allowed to answer under sub C. So it wasn't designed to provide the right to arbitration. It was actually designed to limit the scope of an arbitrator's authority. You could no longer negotiate a standard arbitration provision under that bill. That was 66. And Senate, and one was the one where it said that you could, that arbitration would supersede. In other words, you would not have the right to go to the circuit court. And a deputy wouldn't be able to make that choice if the union negotiated arbitration. It would be one or the other.
Where is that?
That one is Substitute Amendment 1. And
to what bill?
Page 84 to 92.
What?
That's the one, 84
one I just read.
Yeah, you could either go, as I read it, maybe it's wrong, you could either go to the court or to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator would have a hearing. Trial should be by the court, or the hearing should be by the arbitrator, and upon return of the board.
Right.
Except that the court or arbitrator may require further return of the taking, further return, or the taking and return of further evidence by the board. The question for the court should be, upon the evidence, was the order of the board reasonable?
That's the one where they give the arbitrator the exact authority that the statute
right.
gives the circuit court.
That's right. Question to be determined by the arbitrator shall be on the I'm on a 7. On the evidence was the action of the board of grievance committee and suspending blah blah. So what they did is they took out the arbitrator and just put it into the court.
Right. They took out the court, put the arbitrator.
Does it say anything about collective bargaining?
I'm sorry?
Does this sentence substitute 1 say anything about collective bargaining?
No. Well, it says sentence substitute 1. Bill 66.
Yeah.
Bill 66 is the one where this arbitration could take away the right to the circuit court appeal. It doesn't, Senate Substitute 1, the one you just read, it doesn't say anything about bargaining. It just sets forth what the scope of the arbitrator's authority will be. Narrows it, greatly narrows it.
So 66 specifically said collective bargaining can supersede.
Right.
And then all that was eliminated.
That was eliminated, but, you know, it was supersede, and it would that means it could take away that right, and the union cannot take away that right through a collective bargaining agreement the way the statute is now. Eliminating, you know, taking away the, not passing the bill that was going to supersede does not mean that they didn't get the right to arbitrate.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Thank you for your time.
I have one more question. Where in 111.70 is the statutory right to arbitrate discipline that you've been referring to that both maintaining the legislature should have explicitly repealed, if that's what they meant to do? Where is that specifically?
Okay.
You only cited generally in your brief, as I...
Right. 111.70 sub 6, I believe.
Sub 6. When you find it in the definition of collective bargaining, 111.71A,
right.
where I assume it's conditions of employment.
That's right.
Now, right? That's traditionally included... terminations.
And that's right. Oh, I gave you the declaration of policy. I'm sorry.
That's not the specific one.
It doesn't, it's in the definition of collective bargaining. It says the right to negotiate all terms and conditions of employment, and that is well established by case law that includes the right to arbitration provisions covering discipline.
Okay. So it's really a right to collectively bargain for arbitration to settle discipline.
That's right.
Rather than a statutory right to arbitrate discipline.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Mr. Zames?
Just a couple of points, I hope. The legislature here has done something and has had a very practical solution for a unique class of employees, law enforcement employees. Under Chapters 59 and 62, only the legislature can change that. I think the whole estoppel argument is that the only time, and there was never any communication coming back from the union saying, we don't agree with how you interpret the city of Janesville or anything else. The first time we heard that there was going to be arbitration was after they lost. And they knew the record was very extensive and the circuit court would not overturn the decision. So then they said, okay, we're going to take a crack at you through arbitration. The parties had twice before gone through with this same individual the statutory hearing process. And in neither case was there an appeal to circuit court, and in neither case was there a grievance filed or anything mentioned that, in fact, that was the position that the union was taking. The question is, under the record and the statute, it doesn't require a hearing. How do you establish a record for circuit court review unless you make a full and have a full due process hearing to establish the record? Because the key here is that you have the circuit court review. And if the circuit court is not satisfied, the circuit court either can make it go and do it again or do part of it again, or the circuit court can just say, you didn't prove it and you didn't establish just cause. How the WERC harmonized the statute means nothing, because it did that prior to Janesville. Janesville changed all that. And I think it's important to note that WERC is a party to this litigation, but they're not participating. They are not, aren't taking a position here that, in fact, a decision that they issued 15 years ago should prevail. How do you, and our position is, you can't distinguish Janesville, you can't distinguish 62 and 59. Either you have to agree with Janesville, or you have to overrule it. There's a conflict there that I don't see any way around.
Counsel, I'd like to get, I'm hesitant to beat this dead horse. Let me try it one more time. In 1996, when you entered into this collective bargaining agreement, when the county entered into it with the police, with the deputy sheriffs, you had the city of Janesville case in front of you, because that was a 1995 case. The county agreed to arbitration in the collective bargaining agreement. And yet the first, this may not be the first time, but at least it's the first time we've seen it, first time Mr. Rizzo attempts to avail himself of that collective bargaining agreement, which Eau Claire County signed, they said, oh, you can't do it. Now, does that strike? It seems like it's what they gave with one hand in the collecting bargaining agreement, they never intended. Is that good faith bargaining? It seems to me like they never intended to go through with collective bargaining.
Your Honor, I don't think it has anything to do with good faith bargaining at all. The fact is that City of Janesville in 1993, Wisconsin Act 53, changed the way Eau Claire County was required to handle discharges, suspensions without pay, and demotions. In Eau Claire County, when the issue was raised, specifically put the union on notice, this is how we're going to do it because this is what the law says. The union at that time had an option too. They could have either responded back or they could have gone to the WERC and said, wait a minute, we have this other right. That did not happen. Neither one of those things happened. The fact is, under Janesville, whether the language still remains in the contract or not doesn't make any difference, because there's an irreconcilable difference between the statute and 111.70. And since there is, the contract, to the extent that there's a direct conflict, is null and void. And we can't make the union take the language out of the contract. We tried to negotiate it out, and the union wouldn't agree to it.
Are you saying that either party to a collective agreement can hide in the bushes and sign a contract that they know is contrary to law, giving the other side a right that they know they can never avail themselves of?
Well, that's not what happened, though, Your Honor.
Sort of like pass and raise, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. Everybody was aware of City of Janesville. Everybody was aware of 1993, Wisconsin Act 53, and Senate Bill 66 and Substitute Amendment Number 1. There was no surprises on either side of this issue, Your Honor.
You just didn't know what it ultimately would wind up with in a court.
That's right, except for the fact that we felt and have always felt that the statutory language is clear and that we had no option not to follow the statutory language. Certainly the sheriff no longer has an option to just fire somebody.
So you might as well just leave the clause in the contract and rely upon its unenforceability, basically.
Sure. If it's unenforceable, it's just like there are statutes that are unconstitutional that have never been removed.
Still on the books.
But have never been removed by the legislature. We deal with Chapter 55 all the time. A couple provisions of that statute were ruled unconstitutional in 1987. They're still there. But the other point is, though, that there are other issues that would fall within the contract, because there's more that you arbitrate than just discipline. You arbitrate the meaning of the wording of the contract and all those kinds of issues too.
Okay. Mr. Zames, thank you, Ms. Sullivan. That concludes the hearing.